station.
And we're back. We're back for our first spring show of 2021.
I guess it is spring.
It's spring. Today's the first day of spring. For us recording, for you listeners, it's what, 4 or 5 days in. But we're here. And it's still cold outside. I think that, you know, we follow Punxsutawney, Phil.
But we
said there's 6 more weeks of winter.
I feel like it's warmer in early fall than it is in, or it's warmer in early fall than it is in early spring.
Yeah,
I would. We get that Indian summer.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Indian summer is where like the heat and humidity last into like September, like in the beginning of fall.
I thought you were saying it's in the spring.
Yeah, although can we even say Indian summer anymore?
Yeah, who knows, the cancel culture might take that away too.
But peeps know what I'm talking about. I think the producer woke up and said it was 32 degrees outside. And I was like, ugh.
Yeah, it's not nice. But we'll keep trudging on. Welcome to Sometimes More is Less. That's the saying, right? Sometimes more is less. Or is it the opposite? Sometimes less is more.
More is less. Oxymoron.
We were talking about this last week. Yeah.
For this week,
sometimes more is less. And what we're going to get into is sometimes more force is less of a problem. You know what I mean there, Patrick?
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean. We're on the same level. We might be miles away from each other recording, but we're in the zone. So I think we brought this up before as far as our word of the day or our phrase of the day, but it's applicable to today's episode in different ways. And we're going to bring up reasonable suspicion again. And the reason why reasonable suspicion is so important is because both our case of the week and our episode, like the meat of the episode, we're talking about a traffic stop, which the minimal level of proof that an officer needs to conduct a traffic stop is reasonable suspicion. So the reasonable suspicion is a proof. It's a level of proof in the United States legal system. Sometimes people are more familiar with beyond a reasonable doubt or probable cause, but there's actually a bunch of steps, if you can imagine them as being steps, in the levels of proof. It's more than a mere hunch. It's more than just no evidence, but it's less than probable cause. So you can't make an arrest on reasonable suspicion. You need probable cause to make an arrest, but you can start your investigation on reasonable suspicion. And that's where we're at a lot of times. But I got this little infogram of levels of proof, and I know you can see it, Pat. But have you ever heard of a scintilla?
Scintilla.
A scintilla. So we're looking at these steps. And on the very bottom step, there's no evidence. Okay, that's where we're at sometimes. No evidence.
And the next
step up is scintilla. Scintilla.
Sorry, I thought you were throwing a picture of Jacob's ladder there for a second.
No.
Trying to get some workout in the morning.
But let me ask you this:
scintilla.
Are you looking it up?
Any trace or spark of a specified quality or feeling. A scintilla of doubt.
Yeah, so I don't know how much you are familiar with 60s music, but do you remember the Big Bopper?
The name rings a bell, but
he sang a song called "The Chantilly Lace." And while I was sitting here looking at scintilla, I was thinking, does he say scintilla lace? Because like a mere bit of lace, you know, whatever. But it wasn't
tiny or scarcely detectable amount.
Yeah. So we're above scintilla. We're above that. We're the next step is reasonable suspicion. And how would you describe that, Pat? Is like some articulable facts that you can say, you know, raise an eyebrow and
that quote unquote crime is afoot.
Yeah, that there is crime afoot. So that's where we're at, reasonable suspicion. And then if you are curious, we have probable cause, we have preponderance of the evidence, clear and convincing evidence, and then we have reasonable doubt, and then beyond reasonable doubt. So that reasonable doubt, you know, one of our judges likes to describe it as, you know, if I say, is this guy guilty from the evidence that you just heard, and you, and it gives you pause that that might be reasonable doubt.
Yeah, but I would add one on top of that, and I would add on top of beyond a reasonable doubt is mathematical certainty or certainty, because it, it doesn't have to be 100% foolproof.
So you're saying, like, if we were able to put a number on it to say we are 100% sure that this is – that's a mathematical certainty,
mm-hmm.
which is less than beyond reasonable doubt. I'm sorry, which is more than beyond reasonable doubt.
Yep. You can't it's almost impossible to describe a percentage-wise with this, because it just – it doesn't work out. But beyond a reasonable doubt is, yeah, whenever – the judge, the way they describe it is whenever you make an important decision in your life, you pause before coming to that conclusion. And that's like beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
But they also say that it, which is a high burden, but it also say it doesn't have to be mathematical certainty.
Well, there you go. You got levels of proof. I think we actually talked about doing a whole episode on levels of proof, because you probably could a whole episode.
Maybe we'll do that next time.
But I think it'd be interesting to have, you know, maybe a defense attorney. Really,
if we're going down this ship, we're going down with it.
We need to.
Yeah.
We don't want to shortchange anybody here.
I mean, our goal is just to explain the lead into this incident, and that's just basically why you're talking about reasonable suspicion.
Yeah. But it's important because it comes up a lot. I would assume that most debated traffic stops are going to start off with this reasonable suspicion discussion.
Yeah.
So, all right. So moving on to the case of the week, which, you know, I think Patrick and I have said a couple of times now that these are damn interesting. And you know what? So this one is even better because it was decided on February 16th of 2021. So we're talking a month and a couple days old that this was out. So this one that we're discussing this week is United States v. Burris. Not Hannibal Burris. Burris.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to spell that name. I've seen Burris, maybe B-U-R-R-U-S. That's interesting.
How would you spell it?
B-U-R-R-I-S.
Oh. Well, this is not you, so.
I see that.
All right, here we go. On July 23rd of 2018, Officer Hess of the Penn Hills Police Department was on routine traffic patrol.
I hate that.
What?
No traffic stop is routine.
No, she was on a routine traffic patrol. She didn't even do the traffic stop yet.
Oh, but I still don't like that.
All right, so nix the word routine, as you were.
Yeah.
All right, so she was in a high crime area of the Penn Hills area of Pennsylvania. He checked the license plate of a blue Nissan Maxima using the NCIC computer in his car, and the results revealed that the vehicle's registration was expired, and that the vehicle's owner, which was a Daquella Donald. I don't know how to say Daquella. Daquella. I'm sorry if I butchered your name. Daquella Donald had an expired driver's license. So Hess followed the vehicle and shortly thereafter pulled it over. So what would you have? Would you even have reasonable suspicion at this point?
You have probable cause.
You got probable cause.
Yeah. Heck,
there's an expired registration. Yeah, we're above that. So the vehicle had three occupants, a female driver, a male in the front passenger seat, and a female passenger in the rear seat. Officer Haas does what cops do and asks Donald, who was driving, if they had their identification. She had their identification. She responded that she did not. She could not produce the car's registration, identification card, or insurance certificate. What the heck is going on here? This is a mess, right? I mean, how many people can't produce this information when everybody knows that they need it? Officer Hess asked if anyone in the car had identification and heard no answer. He then took the names of all the passengers. Is that normal?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not. I wouldn't say it's normal, but I wouldn't say it's not normal. You know, it's like one of those things where, depending on where you're at, depending on what you're doing, you may not.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Well, the thing is, too, if she doesn't have a driver's license, you want to know if somebody else in the car has a driver's license.
That's probably why they're getting to that.
Yeah. So he then took the name of all the passengers. The male passenger told Officer Hess that his name was Christian Burris and provided his date of birth. The female passenger told the officer that her name was Tamika Maddox, and Donald told Hess that someone would come to pick up the vehicle, which shows she's already saying, like, look, none of us can drive. The vehicle's all a mess. I'm not doing it. So Officer Hess recognized Burris upon approaching the vehicle because he had recalled a wanted poster that was posted in around the lineup room or the roll call room from a year earlier, which, you know, kind of makes me cringe because, again, was somebody, I mean, that's a year had gone past since he'd seen this poster. I don't know how fresh that is, but either way, he remembers Burris from a lineup poster, a roll call poster.
My second, well, how the heck does he remember? Well, but they're usually like posted in an area that you kind of like walk by them every day.
Yeah, and sometimes the sergeant or lieutenant or whoever is going to give your roll call will actually go over them and read the information. This is Christian Burris. He's wanted for drug offenses or felony drug offenses, and he lives here. And his, you know, clothing description, who his associates are. So depending on which agency you are with, they might have a little bit more information about them than just a mere picture hanging on the wall. So Officer Hess noticed that Burris appeared very nervous, sweating profusely, and would not make eye contact with him. And during this whole trial, I guess Officer Hess testified that he had never encountered a passenger as nervous as Burris during the stop. So, I mean, we see that sometimes. And, you know, sometimes you think, how the heck, you know, are you basing a 30-second interaction of somebody being nervous and the nervousest they've ever seen? Well, guess what? When we do, you know, 5 traffic stops a day, and we've been working on the job for 5 or 10 years, that's a lot of traffic stops. And we get this baseline, again, of what's normal. And when we get up to the car, the guy's not looking at you, sweating. And he, what date was this? Why was he sweating? Is it like
July of 2018?
Oh, okay, all right, whatever. It is hot, right?
Penn Hills is around Pittsburgh.
Okay, so it's not like crazy north.
No, but I mean, cooler. It's July. It's hot. I mean,
So either way, he's putting this all together. But either way, again, we establish a baseline, and when we see somebody, you can even tell somebody's breathing is messed up or breathing is different, you know, from the amount of traffic stops you've been on. So. Okay, so Officer Hess did run an NCIC check on Burris, which revealed that he had a suspended driver's license and an active warrant for his arrest for a probation violation. He called for a backup unit. Backup unit arrived. Hess called dispatch and confirmed that the warrant was still active. And this whole process of running Burris's information took less than 3 minutes. Now, that's going to come up to be important here. In a moment, less than 3 minutes from now. Officer Hess then arrested Burris. He walked to the passenger side of the window, asked if he had any weapons on him. Burris did not reply, got out of the car, arrested him, and found a gun in his waistband. Come on, man. At that point, the gig is up, right? But I guess later on, he'll probably say that those pants weren't his or something like that, and it wasn't his gun.
Yeah. Hey, at least he didn't try to use it.
You're right. Yeah, we appreciate that, Mr. Burris. So an investigation revealed that the firearm was stolen and Mr. Burris was not permitted to possess a firearm. So he was charged with a couple different things. He filed a couple motions that to try to say that the search was illegal. The state court denied them and then he ended up pleading guilty, but then he filed another motion. That's where we're at now with this. He filed another appeal. So anyway, so what Burris is saying, and the reason why he's appealing this, is because he said that the officer's time to conduct the warrant check on a passenger during a traffic stop does not constitute a deviation from the traffic, or it does constitute a deviation from the traffic stop's mission, which you would need reasonable suspicion for. So the crux of this issue, and this is interesting to me, Patrick, because I mean, we're again, you talk about going deep, like this is going deep.
Yeah, I'm reading through it.
Yeah, so the moment, like, I pulled you over for a traffic violation, and you have another person in your car. In order for me to run another person's name and extend the length of that traffic stop, I need reasonable suspicion to do that because I'm deviating from the mission of the traffic stop because I'm really only should only be dealing with you.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, they actually have a name for it. It's called the Rodriguez moment. And at that moment, if I don't have reasonable suspicion to veer off, then that becomes now a suppressible item or like a fruit of the poisonous tree.
So, type of thing. That'd be like you start, you have nothing, the passenger gives you information, you verify the passenger's information, then you just start asking them all these random questions that prolong the stop and have nothing to do with the actual stop.
Absent reasonable suspicion,
right.
You're probably up shit creek.
Yep.
So let's see here. All right. So the parties, we both say that the traffic stop was lawful at its inception,
mm-hmm.
but the unreasonable extension occurs when the officer, without reasonable suspicion, diverts from the traffic stop's base purpose to investigate a different crime.
But the court ruled that during the purpose of the traffic stop, one of the things you always do is you'll run people for warrants.
So that's ended up kind of where they veered off here too.
Yeah.
So the court actually says tasks ordinarily tied to the mission of a traffic stop include checking the driver's license, determining whether there are outstanding warrants against the driver, and inspecting the automobile's registration proof of insurance. An officer may conduct certain unrelated checks during the otherwise lawful stop, but may not do so in a way that prolongs the stop absent reasonable suspicion. We call that time, which a stop is measurably extended, the Rodriguez moment.
So, but based on this clearly has reasonable suspicion because recognizes this person from a wanted poster.
Exactly. So they said, applying this legal framework, the district court concluded that the warrant check was permissible because conducting a warrant check on a passenger is negligibly burdensome precaution to protect the officer rather than the deviation from the mission of the stop. And the court found that even if the warrant did not prolong the traffic stop, Officer Hess had reasonable suspicion to do so. Because, again, he could say the totality of the circumstance, and we're going to go into it. So they said that he was good. Let me go down here. Sorry for the delay. All right, so the Supreme Court stated, where police have been unable to locate a person suspected of involvement in a past crime, the ability to briefly stop that person, ask questions, or check identification in the absence of probable cause promotes the strong government interest in solving crimes and bringing offenders to justice. Though a criminal record, much less an arrest record, is not sufficient to establish reasonable suspicion, it's a valid factor. So again, they're basically saying, hey, even if he knew that it was a year old, he's able to briefly stop and see if there is an outstanding warrant, and it's not going to constitute, you know, it's not going to violate anybody's rights. Other facts also support the district court's finding to reasonable suspicion, which is that Officer Hess observed that Burris was sweating heavily, would not make eye contact with him, and he'd never seen somebody act this way before. And then he also could not produce identification.
Well, neither could the driver.
Yeah, and that's – yeah. So, again, you get – you know, you're talking about these traffic stops, and what's insane for me to – you know, if you sit down and rationalize this or think about it, is that these officers who are not attorneys, right, who spend six months in the academy, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, depending on where you're coming from, get on-the-job training, are making these legal decisions – out in the field, and Officer Hess did everything correct. And, you know, we get our balls busted for, you know, sometimes screwing it up, but man, a lot of times we have a lot of things to consider and most times we're doing them right. So congrats to Officer Hess on this one.
Good job, Officer Hess.
Yeah. Penn Hills Department. Moving on. So now we get into the meat. I think we got like a double meat episode. This.
Please don't say that again.
Don't say double meat. Okay.
Yeah. Don't please. We'll get too far once now. That's like way too far.
All right. I'll heed your
advice. I'm looking up the Penn Hills Police Department.
Are you going to figure out like how big they are and what type of jurisdiction do they cover?
Mm-hmm.
So while he looks that up, today we're going to be talking about the traffic stop turn shootout in Tennessee, where a woman, Nika Holbert, was in the receiving end of some police gunfire and she ended up dying. And depending on how you want to phrase that, could sound either really bad for police or might not. But basically, we're going to be talking about Officer Josh Baker of the Metro Nashville Police Department. You find anything about Penn Hills?
Yeah. I was right. They are about 50 full-time police officers. They handle about 25,000 calls a year. And they cover 20 square miles of area, serving 45,000 residents in and around the suburbs of Allegheny County. So, yeah, like right outside of Pittsburgh.
Interesting. So not one of those small Pennsylvania police departments that have like two officers.
No, 50 officers. They're not huge, but they've got a decent amount. I mean, 50 officers.
They're probably on the middle or the lower end of middle.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there.
Yep.
Okay. So this interaction and this traffic stop and everything went viral. Maybe 2 weeks ago. When did this happen? Actually, it only happened like a week ago. So basically, this traffic stop, the officer, Josh, what was it again? Baker. So Josh Baker is out driving around. He sees this vehicle. He runs the registration. It's registered to a male with an outstanding warrant. And I got to give it again, give credit to Mr. Baker because he's a big boy. Okay. He's a big, big guy. Sometimes men of his size don't feel like doing anything, but he's out like getting it, right? He's out making these traffic stops, these felony stops. So I got to give it to him. And he pulls over this vehicle. It's outside the Family Dollar or outside Dollar General, whatever it is. And he gets in contact with this Nika. Now, at the beginning, you know, he realizes that Nika is not the person that he was looking to pull over. Oh, by the way, in my notes. So he pulled over a vehicle. I'm asking you this, Patrick. He pulled over a vehicle based upon the registered owner having warrants. Does that case sound familiar?
Yeah.
Talked about it on the side now.
Kansas versus Glover.
Yeah, Kansas v. Glover. This is where we talked about.
It doesn't have the same exact facts, but the overall rationale behind why you're conducting the traffic stop is.
Yeah. So this is where I don't know and I don't have enough facts is that when in Kansas v. Glover, part of that is that when you find out that the person that you pulled the vehicle over to investigate is not the driver or maybe in the vehicle, if there's warrants associated with them, you're kind of supposed to like break contact and be done. I don't know what happened here with Mr. Baker, but he must have realized that this female that got out of the car was not the guy that he was looking for. And there's a reason. Is, you know, there should be a reason why he continued with this investigation. And you know, is it a mere encounter? I don't think so, because I think the officer, the lights are on. They're in this traffic stop. She parked.
His car is definitely not a mirror encounter.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. So you can't say that. So this guy, there's, and I heard him say in the video.
Or you know what I was thinking, that we used to do this a lot. Maybe there was an actual traffic violation that he just didn't like outwardly vocalize. Yeah, which could be a possibility.
It could be a possibility because, you know, the traffic code is so laden with, right, you know, violations. So it might be. But he did say, because she's like, well, I'm not him. And he said, but now I have to deal with these other problems. So I'm guessing there was something. I hope that he wasn't just BSing her and said that he got to deal with these other problems. I'm thinking because he found marijuana and we saw the marijuana in the video, that he smelled the marijuana and he was investigating yeah. that. Maybe that's what it is. But based on Kansas v. Glover, as soon as he saw that it was not the dude, if that's all he had, then, you know, he probably should have broken contact. But again, we don't know that yet. And we'll find out more.
Like, we can't, obviously the body cam doesn't vocalize what's going on necessarily in his head. So we don't know that without more information right. to come to light.
So in the video,
by the way, this is a great topic idea. I'm glad you thought of it.
Yeah, thank you. But in the video, Baker keeps, he's like looking through her purse, and while he's in her purse, she's in and out of the car. First, he actually asks for the purse, and before she gives him the purse, what does she do? She's in her car, bent over, digging in her purse. Now, what do you think she's doing now after watching the video?
She's trying to hide something, taking out her gun. Yeah. Oh, that's,
she ultimately had the gun. He says he, you know, wanted her purse. She bends over. She's doing something you can't see, and then she hands him the purse. I think she took out the gun and stashed it quick. Again, I don't know, but then she gives him the purse, and she's not too concerned about the marijuana. And again, she must have said something about that, because when she gave him it, she says, Officer Baker says, so it's in here. So again, she must have said, yeah, I got a little bit of weed. It's in my purse. Not a big deal. Takes out the gun, whatever. But as far as tactics and stuff goes, she's in and out of the car. She's getting cigarettes. She wants stuff out of her purse. It's just a mess there too. But
well, you can hear the radio transmission. I think they used code 2 or code 3 or something. And basically what he's asking for another unit, and the unit responds and asks him basically, I think what he meant was, do you need me emergency? And he's like, no, I don't need you emergency. So another backup's on the way. They're just not coming lights and siren to get to him.
Yeah. So the other thing that I realized too is, and I've seen this a couple of different times, I know you have too, Pat, is that what do people do? What is one action that people do that they know they have warrants, they know they have something going bad that they do while you're investigating? Do you know what I'm talking about?
You're talking the hand motion you just made? Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a hint.
Yeah. They're always calling. They're calling people to say,
They call now.
They call now as soon as they get pulled over and you haven't even made contact with them.
Well, that's because of the state of policing we're in.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
I just got pulled over. You know, call my mom.
Yeah, when the person's like 40 years old. Call my mom. Tell her to put some bread on my books.
Put some bread on my books.
So she's on the phone, and you know, I'm looking at like, does she know that she's going to jail for something? Is she calling for a ride? It sounds like she just called somebody and said, "Hey, I got pulled over." You know, they were looking for this guy, so she knows what's going on. So anyway, and then she even says on the phone that she had some weed too. And it's interesting because Officer Baker takes the marijuana out. You see it. And then he leaves the purse on the back of the car, leaves her, and walks back to his car and puts the marijuana on his dash. And he still hasn't made that decision to arrest, in my opinion, because he goes back to her, he lets her get a cigarette. She like goes back into the car to get a lighter. And again, that's that part of those tactics are kind of a mess. I wouldn't have done it that way, but that's what happened. But either way, in my mind, I think that he's not ready to arrest her yet, because he would have. Now, as he's digging through the car or digging through the purse, he then finds a bag of cocaine. And at that point, you can tell his demeanor changes, and he goes to arrest her. And when he goes to arrest her, he's giving her commands. He's saying, "Hey, you're under arrest for this. Put your hands behind your back. Stop." And she's like, I don't know, screaming like, "Help, help!" And it's like, "What are you talking about? Like, why are you screaming?"
That reminds me of that one where I chased that like heavier set female like around. That's what it reminded me of.
I've heard her screaming.
Yeah. See, at that point though, I'm gonna pick on him a little bit. I think he could have, like, he had some rapport enough there that he could have said, you know, maybe just wait over here. In the back of my mind, you know, he's got backup coming. Maybe just wait over here and we'll deal with it. I don't know if it would have changed it, but that was one of those things where, okay, well, he's making the commit. He's committed to going in and arresting her right then at that moment by himself. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Maybe he could have just said, you know, wait over here. I don't know. It seemed like there wasn't like angst or anything between them at that point.
No, I think that so far that they've had this rapport between them where she told him that there is marijuana in her purse. He finds it. He still doesn't move to arrest her. Then he finds cocaine. And one of the things that we've done as when we're on the street together is you minimize it until you have that backup there. You minimize it until you're ready to and tactically ready to make that move. And so you can even ask them questions since they're not in custody. Oh, what is this? Is this some coke?
Have them sit down on the curb or something like that until you need to do what you need to do.
Yeah. And again, you could play it off like, well, I don't know what the boss is going to say about this one. I'll have to, you know, put it in with the evidence and I don't know. Either way, I get what you're saying, because at that point, you know, they have gone so far with it being like a cordial interaction. So what's the point? And that's kind of where people are telling police to go now. Let's slow it down.
Yeah.
But the thing is, and this is where I and you and I are on the same page too. Listen, in no way, shape, or form are Patrick and I saying that she had any right in the world to run away, resist, scream for help. That's all bullshit. She should have 100% complied with our commands. And I was watching another YouTube video about this, and it was a very comical and oh my gosh, I don't know how to describe him. Very comical guy who was just saying like she's wrong. Like she was 100% wrong. She shouldn't have ran away from him. She shouldn't have resisted. And it was his opinion that because it's 2021, that people are testing police just to test them. And some of them are willing to do whatever to get a paycheck, and even willing to die to get famous on you know, video and to get the paycheck, which is insane and sad.
I could see that. But yeah, I mean, I think she legitimately like knew she had the gun. I don't think she was. I mean, she certainly wasn't even worried about the weed. What it was, a weed pipe or something like that? And then
I don't know. I saw the picture on the body camera of the weed.
Oh, and then you know, maybe the cocaine. I mean, right now she's probably looking at
going to jail. Yeah. Just a summons.
Yeah, and
a misdemeanor.
But I think she legitimately thought that he was going to find the gun, so she wanted to skedaddle to whatever means that whatever she did. Running around the car.
Yeah. So then, you know, she's running around the car. He's like yanking on her arm. She gets in the car, which is, again, I saw it happening and I was like, no, don't let her go. You got to cut her off. She gets in. And we all know that once you get in the car, you kind of feel, you have a little bit more like of a position of not authority, but just like a, it's just harder to pull somebody out of a car and arrest them than it is to arrest them standing up.
Yep.
So she, you know, you don't want to let her get in the car. Plus it's like her home base. There's could be a million different things inside the car. We found out that there was a gun in the car, but again, Officer Baker doesn't have tactics. He's using like what I would call like juvenile tactics, or like what I would do when I was fighting with my brothers and sisters when I was younger, where we would just like pull on each other's arms to try to get them to move. Like that doesn't work. We need to do correct tactics. So he pulls on her, he tases her, the taser appears that it does, it's ineffective. It doesn't make a good connection. You know, and we've talked about this in the taser episode, that you have to be a certain amount of distance away. The probes shoot out. Maybe, you know, one of the probes missed. So what he does, again, pretty good tactics. He sees that it doesn't work, and he goes in for a drive stun, and he puts the taser onto her arm. It completes the connection. You see her tense up. She kind of like makes like a board.
Yep.
And it was at that point that she, you could also see that she was looking to her right or looking towards the center console of the vehicle. And he, the officer, sees that she now has a gun in her hand. He yells gun. He says, drop the gun, drop the gun. At the same time, he unholsters his gun. So now at this point he has taser and lethal out on her, and he's still giving her commands, still giving commands. He's backing up a little bit, and she shoots and she hits him. And then he shoots like three or four more times, five times, and he falls down to the ground.
And she dies, but she actually drove away for a little bit.
If you, then the video switches to the dash cam of the patrol vehicle. The dash cam shows her throw her gun out of the car. The gun is laying beside him now, and she backs up and then drives away. She actually, you know, goes unconscious while she was driving and ran into like some bushes, and the police found her and took her to the hospital, but she ended up dying from her injuries. So that's it. And, again, I'm thinking to myself, like, so much going on here as far as like, I just keep thinking tactics, because again, I will never, ever say that she had any right to, you know,
well, she had arrest. That, I mean, she had that coming. She made the conscious decision to try to flee and to use her firearm. And hey, man, when you get that, you commit to ending your own life at that point. So she made that decision. That's on her.
She grabbed the gun.
Right. And she probably, I mean, I'm guessing she can't possess the firearm. So she's.
I don't know. I mean, I would assume that there's something, and I'm guessing you're saying that because why would you hide it?
Yes,
if you're
exactly.
able to possess it?
Right. Yeah,
same here. Okay. So anyway, the chief of the agency came out right away, released the videos, and the chief, and I know that because we're in racial America now, where everything is race, and now we're talking about how you know, even the recent shooting went down in Miami of some Asian stores, you know,
that was Georgia.
Was it Georgia?
Yeah, I thought so.
Oh, Georgia, where, you know, now we're talking, we're even more deep into race again. And anyway, Chief Drake is a black man, and you know, he came out and he said that the officer did everything that he could to try to take Nika into custody without using lethal force. He used less lethal. He even, you know, if you're talking about some of this use of force continuum, where we're talking about verbal commands, and then we talk about, you know, escort techniques, we talk about less lethal with tasers. And at that point, you know, he would have gone up and started doing some striking implements, you know, if we're actually going to follow like a line here. But he was presented with deadly force after the taser, so he ended up having to go to deadly force. So, I mean, the chief says he sees nothing wrong with it. He also, which I liked him say, is that letting her go is not an option. He said that right to the news media. He said, look, I didn't expect Officer Baker to let her go at that point. Like she was under arrest. He had every right to take her in based upon everything that he knew. You know, she's already driving another felon's car, so you know she's associating with other felons. She you know, has drugs on her. Like, again, he's allowed to take her in. And you know, it's just to get you going here, Patrick, I put some, this lady Ashley Upkins, I've never heard of her, but she was published in saying some of these comments. She commented on this whole article. She said that Nika made some bad decisions, but you just don't understand her state of mind. And I'm thinking, like, what do you mean? Her state of mind is, I'm trying to get away from the police at all costs, whether that be shoot them or whatever. It's like, she also says, it's an officer. He's now pointing a black object at her. Does she know it's a taser gun? What do you expect an officer? She says,
he's also telling her like she's under arrest. I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, oh my God.
But that the way that she said that made it sound like she like flipped the script.
Okay.
How does she know it's a taser gun? Like,
all right.
She doesn't have the right to say that it's like, she doesn't, like, we're completely flipping this on its head. You don't have, if you're presenting an officer with deadly force and an officer presents you with deadly force, you can't say I had to defend myself against the officer and I shot him. Like, that doesn't make any sense. You can't, that's so bizarre.
Well, yeah.
Well, to think that way.
Well, what does she think? Can we ask is it Holbert, Nika Holbert? Can we ask her, like, okay, why'd you have a gun? You know what I mean? Like, respond to the comments. Well, at least he tried to use less lethal force, but we don't know what the object is. Okay, well, your person probably can't even possess what you're talking about. Like, if the gun wasn't there, this wouldn't be an issue. You know what I mean?
And then she also says, I also hope in the future, if there is some type of way that the tasers used are a different color other than black, I think that this would go a long way. And you're shaking your head now because you probably think she's an idiot.
God. Sometimes people...
You can try to paint this
any way you want. Okay, and we were talking about this. And look, the officer's tactics, a lot of this, were flat out piss poor, okay? However, you were mentioning the dash cam video, and I told you this when I gave you this idea for this episode. But I told you this when the dash cam video, when he has the taser in his left hand, he is like spot on when he unholsters and goes to lethal force with his right hand. I mean, a lot of cops, you know, that's not the easiest thing to do. I mean, it's muscle memory. It's like, boom, left hand on, right hand, he's unholstered. He's got the gun at her when he sees the gun and is giving her verbal commands at the same time. So to his credit on that, that was sharp tactics. Yeah. And, you know, we're pointing out all his missteps and things he could have done. But again, this is us being in 2020 hindsight. We weren't there on the scene. We don't know all the facts. We don't know what would have happened. We don't know what Miss Holbert would have done. We don't know if that would have changed anything.
Yeah. So I follow up a person on Instagram. It's called Jiu-Jitsu 5-0. And they're pretty cool because they take these major viral incidents and they show how hand-to-hand tactics could have possibly made this a different outcome. And they basically are saying, like, hey, proper training could have prevented this. And that's where the title of the episode comes in too, is like, maybe if Officer Baker were a little bit more, used higher force before it became lethal, that maybe it would have ended with that higher level of force. Maybe, you know, some, you know, armbar takedown techniques or some of these jiu-jitsu techniques would have, again, they would have been higher on the use of force continuum than taser. But I think the argument is saying that if you would have used more force sooner, you would have gotten an arrest with no shooting.
Possibility.
It's a possibility. I'm not saying it would, because again, we're sitting in our living room and you know, basement, basically, of 10 days later critiquing all this. But, you know, again, this is something to consider. And I think that in 2021, as officers, we have to be able to critique ourselves and ourselves personally and critique ourselves as a profession when we see some of these videos of what we could have done differently.
Yeah. I mean, we're here basically saying that we definitely think some Officer Baker, it's Baker, right? He definitely could have done some things differently and probably not the way that we would have done some things, especially, I mean, the biggest fallacy I see is him letting her go back and forth to the car. I mean, you know, that's a problem because you don't know what she's doing or what she's getting access to. And obviously it was potentially to hide the gun and give it access for use later. But again, that doesn't necessarily change or might not have. And or the result could have still been the same. We hope it would not have been. However, that doesn't, you know, lessen the culpability on Ms. Hulbert.
Yes, and that's where we're at. Again, she was 100% wrong in this. And the officer was clearly reacting from her actions, and she was the one who ultimately decided the outcome of this. But the another thing that I wanted to bring up, and the last thing I wanted to bring up, is because of what happened in 2020, or even because of what happened in, you know, those big cases in 2014 and 15, did Officer Baker purposely use less force and wait to be shot at because Miss Nika Hulbert was a black female?
Possibility.
Like, did that go through his mind?
Sure it did.
Because this is where we're at now, where, you know, officers are so afraid of being vilified and lose their jobs, and to have protesters come to their house and destroy their house, and to, you know, even their kids' schools and their wives and or husbands, and it has nothing to do with race. The, you know, this girl had drugs, weed and coke, and she had an illegal gun, you know, again, we think based upon her actions. And the officer, I think, was purposely hesitant in using force because this stuff was going through his mind.
Oh, that's
because the thing is, if somebody has a gun in their hand, and I showed this video in the academy, if somebody has a gun in their hand and you're trying to get them to drop the gun, they will always beat you. They will always get off the shot faster than you. Every single time. Even if the odds are against
them. And you know what would happen was if she was like reaching forward or whatnot, and he, you know, fired and justifiably did what he did, this would be a long drawn out investigation. You know what would happen? It would be, oh my God, you know, this is just another one of those unarmed killings of a black
woman
person. And it would come out that, you know, based on the facts that she was reaching for a gun, it would just take a long time to figure that out. So,
I mean, even in the video, if he would have shot as he was backing up the very first time, because he, you know, she was pointing the gun at him, you know, he would have been justified in doing that. But again, it's just like you said, it would have been a convoluted. Yep. I mean, people are already protesting this. They're saying down in Tennessee, they're saying, stop shooting our black women. That's what they have signs out and saying, stop shooting our black women. And it's like, are you kidding me? She shot him first.
I know.
How can you get behind that?
Actually, I'll bring my mom. My mom and I were talking not too long ago about this one case and where she lives. And it was, you know, a mental health issue. Okay. That the officers went to serve a mental health commitment on the person, tried to, you know, tase them because they were resisting arrest. Well, the person came at the officers with a knife and, you know, they shot and killed the person. You know, they didn't want to do that, obviously, but the people are like protesting, saying like the cops shouldn't have done this. This is ridiculous. It's like, we're almost now poster childs for, we need to take force, or we need to actually like take harm or injury before we can actually react. And which is
right. Insane. We're not right. Doing that. You can't expect anybody in any profession to get harmed, possibly killed before. I mean, the military doesn't do it. The military's rules of engagement, you know, are much, if you're presented with deadly force, then you're allowed to use deadly force.
That reminds what you just said. That reminds me of that scene from Black Hawk Down, where like you probably know the Rangers. I don't know what level they are. What E4s, E3s, or whatever. And they're like sitting there, and they're getting fired upon, and they're like, Sarge, we're getting fired. We're getting shot at. And remember him? He's like, well, shoot back.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep. I haven't seen that movie in a couple of years, but I it's what we're talking about here.
You could tell he's like an older sergeant, and he's like, "You knuckleheads, shoot back."
So that's it for today. Check out the video yourself. We'll have it posted on our show notes. There'll be a link to that, the case of the week, and some of the other articles that I talked about. And but yeah, check it out yourself. Share it with your family, because again, you let us know if you think this is protestable about this innocent woman being gunned down by police. Okay. And if it is, you know, you can come on the show next week and we'll talk about it. There is a big difference
between what is a protest and what is an open discussion after the fact on things that could have been done, things that both sides could have done better, obviously.
Yeah. And you know what I'd like to tell some of these critics is put yourself in that officer's shoes and let yourself get shot first and then shoot back if that's what you
want
to do.
Probably not going to want to try to do that.
Yeah, exactly. No one will. No one. And don't even say this is what we signed up for, because we didn't sign up for that. We didn't sign up to get shot. Okay. We signed up to enforce the law and, you know, make a community safer. And we did not sign up to get shot or hurt, injured, slapped, spit on, you know, none of that stuff. So don't play that game with us.
Oh man. Watch out, people. Frank's pissed off.
I'm pissed.
You know what you're doing? You're getting your blood boiling to get out there and paint your house. You need some amped up energy to do that. I don't mind painting. Yeah. Painting's not one of those. It's not like a daunting thing. It's just.
No. See, this is what happens. I have that mindset. And I'm like, you know, it's not so bad. Well, I'll just, you know, I'll put some earbuds in, listen to some music, listen to a podcast like the Elio Sideshow. And, you know, I'm just going to go paint. And then about 10 minutes into it, I'm like, this sucks. Why? This is not that fun. Especially when you buy the you know, quote unquote, one coat paint, and you realize that you're gonna have to do two coats.
I was just thinking, though, you're probably gonna need some primer.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But you can buy the paint primer mix, which again,
I would do that. Pain in the butt. What are you? Are you Valspar, Sherwin Williams, AC Moore?
Valspar.
Sherwin Williams. That's what we did. We always do that now.
Well, you won't be doing it. You just painted your whole house. All right, so we'll see you next week on the Sideshow. Please chime or tune in.
We'll probably do next week and then take a week off, right? Because of Easter.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to be around next week, so we might have to take 2 weeks off. I don't know.
We'll see.
All right, so either way, go back and listen to one of the old episodes. It'll be worth it, promise. In the meantime, go ahead and give us that 5-star review. Share it to some of your friends. Share it on social media. Share some of our posts. And check out the website if you want to. But either way, if you want to reach out to us, frank@theelliosideshow.com, patrick@theelliosideshow.com. And we're here.
We're here.
We're here.
A little tired, but I'm here.
We're here. All right. We'll see you next time.
Peace.